Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Music Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Greg Dixon. We are live, as we are, every Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I want to thank my guest, Smelly from NoFX, and I want to thank my sponsor, Liquid Death. Smelly, welcome to the show. Nice to see you. We finally did it.
Why, thank you very much.
I got to share the show. Hold on one second. Hold on.
Fucking
I want everybody to watch. Okay, we're good. Welcome to the show. Good to see you. Thank you so very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to sit and chat with me. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. It's only been 3 months in the making, and I finally fucking carved out a little window, you know, between taking naps, taking dogs to the vet, and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, it's funny, too, because when I DM'd you, I'm like, hey, I was a guy with a Travis Matthews shirt on at the park. Do you remember me?
You were the only guy with a Travis Matthews shirt on.
And you were the only one that came up to me and said, Travis Matthews.
That's right.
And I said, oh, I'm just wearing this to impress Fat Mike to see if maybe
he oh, he wouldn't this. Fucking know. That guy is the fashion sense of a 90-year-old woman.
Mm. Hey. How you been, man? There's so much stuff I want to talk to you about. I feel like I just want to talk to you about Stern. Have you been listening to the Stern show about Richard Pussy's hat?
Yeah, the hat. Oh, my God. Just yesterday when Richard was looking at the load was fucking unbelievable. That was old school Stern that I miss.
Yeah. And you know what I was thinking about, too? What is so funny about this, too, right, is that you know that there are people from the Chiefs that are listening to the show as well. And there,
Patrick Mahomes is listening to it. He has to because of Richard.
Yeah, and he used to be on the wrap-up show, remember?
Yes, and Richard cried when he talked to him.
That's right, that's right. I was thinking about you the other day. I was like, oh, I bet you Smelly's totally listening to this.
One every day. Oh, most every day. Sometimes, you know, like I miss it. But yeah, man.
Yeah, classic Stern. So yeah, awesome.
I mean, Richard will do anything. He'll do anything, yeah. Right? But I feel bad for everybody after Sal or whoever gets the hat last, you know.
Right, right.
People who don't know, there was a bet on the Howard Stern show that if Kansas City didn't make it to the Super Bowl, everybody jacks off on a Kansas City hat and Richard just wear it.
And, oh, shit, what was I going to tell you? And then Gary backed out.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, I don't blame him either.
I mean, after seeing the liquid goo dripping off the hat, I don't blame him.
Smelly, how old were you when you started playing drums?
About 14.
Did it come pretty easy for you, or was it something you had to work at?
No, it came pretty easy because I was playing with older guys. Like, I started playing with some guys that already knew how to play instruments. So it really, like, helped me get better fast because they already knew the basics of play. So I picked it up really fast, and within 6 months, I was playing actual real shows.
Yeah, it's funny because now, were you all self-taught?
Yeah, 100%, still to this day. And you know, and it's really hindered me. Like, for the first, like, you know, 15 years, I didn't give a shit. I was just playing fast punk rock, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But now, as I'm older and I want to play other stuff or this or that, like, I don't know how to play anything other than fast punk rock. And if I do try other shit, I don't have the fundamentals. It's really kind of lame.
Yeah, you know, I love watching you drum. You're one of these drummers that are constantly always in the pocket, and you have no tempo fluctuation. Like, and I've talked to people about this. You know, it's so funny. Last night I went to meet my brother-in-law for a quick bite to eat and a drink. And I walked into this restaurant and Noodles was sitting there.
Oh, yeah.
And I go, hey, because we know each other. I mean, I'm not super tight. We don't exchange Christmas cards or anything, but, you know, we know each other and we talk. And I go, Smelly's going to be on the show tomorrow and yada, yada, yada. And we were talking. I said, you know, it's so crazy, you know, watching him drum because you are one of these drummers that are constantly in the pocket and you have no, you know, fluctuation with your beats. Like, everything is like, you're so precise, you know. It's like people say, like, James Hetfield in Metallica has the best right hand in metal music, or Tony Iommi. And I put you right up there with those types of musicians where, like, yeah, maybe you are just playing fast punk rock beats, but people don't realize the dexterity and what goes into that. And I just wanted to give you love for that because I'm sure you've heard it before, but I've never had a chance to express my gratitude and how much I enjoy watching you play drums. And I just think the world of you. And I think not when you play.
Yeah. When I was younger, I tried being a flashy, fancy guy.
Right.
Do all these roles and do all this shit. And then I quickly realized that I don't have the chops for that. And that's what the music is for. And I think a lot of drummers get confused. They want to be the front guy. Drums are the foundation, man. Let the music sing over top of it. Let the music do what it does. And the roles and the other parts are just a segue two parts together.
Sure.
You know, a song is a 3-minute ride. It's not a 3-minute drum solo. And I got lost in that for a long time. And I think a lot of people do. They forget, like, you're there to support, you're the backbone to let the body stand up.
Right.
You know, and
right. And what kind of music did you grow up? I mean, obviously punk rock, but were you into like classic rock or metal or ska, reggae? Were you into anything else like that? Or was
I was into everything because he had a huge record collection and I'd wake up, you know, he was constantly playing loud music, and whether it be like early Deep Purple or like Poco Harum or Miles Davis or, you know, some flamenco guitar player, there was always music going on in the house. That was about all I got out of that. But that's, you know, there was always music going on. So music always kind of like, to me, spoke to me. It really did. And it was my escape. So I'd come home from school and I was never very good at school. And I always was kind of an outcast and this and that. And I would just put headphones on it, you know, at 11 years old and just get lost. I would just pick a record and just get lost in it.
Did you like that kind of music, the 70s classic rock, the 70s metal?
Fuck yeah, dude. What's not to like?
Yeah, a lot of people, it's funny, because I remember like 10 years ago, I would talk to people like at punk shows and stuff. I'm like hard rock and a lot of metal. And, you know, I'd go to shows, and once I started to kind of meet people such as yourself, or like the dudes in Voodoo Glow Skulls, or like even Mike Ness, I remember, you know, said, oh yeah, you know, at first it seemed like these guys were always so kind of gun shy to admit that they liked metal music. But like you said,
every punker that you talk to, their introduction to punk rock was kind of through hard rock. You don't go from listening to Lawrence Welk with your grandma,
right,
and fucking punk rock the next day. My dad was playing hard rock in the 70s, and I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. And then when I heard something harder, it was like, fuck yeah, that's me.
Yeah. What was the first punk band that you heard that kind of allowed you to make that transition into the punk world?
There's a couple. I remember, okay, the first punk song I ever heard was the Ramones' Beat on Rap. And I was in my grandma's car with my uncle, and it came on the radio like at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And I was like, what the fuck is this? You know, I'm like 11, 12 years old. I'm like, what the fuck is this? They're talking about beating on a fucking kid with a baseball bat? What the fuck? And it was so weird. It was so like, out of this world. It was fucking, it was awesome. It struck me. And then shortly thereafter, I was looking through a magazine, like a People magazine or a Time magazine or something like that. And there was a picture of the Dead Boys.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a picture of them. And they were all slimy and sweaty. Like they just played a show and they're in their ripped up clothes and they're fucking just like, you know, like a bunch of skinny junkies.
Right.
And I was like, that's punk rock. That's what I heard, the Ramones. And it really grabbed my attention. And shortly thereafter, I was at a swap meet walking around and I came across a boys set and I stole it. The very first record I stole.
That's awesome. That's punk.
Yeah. And so that was my introduction to punk rock.
That's so rad. You know, I would think my first punk band was Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
I think that's the first band that I really, like my cousin played in like a speed metal band back in the day. And, you know, that's when they would play like DRI and stuff like that, but I didn't really grasp it too much. But yeah, crazy. I just wanted to ask you that. You know, and fast forwarding to now with like the Fat bands and all these bands that, you know, you guys have on the Fat label and whatnot. Would you think when like the punk rock kind of started changing a little bit, like where it started becoming a little bit more melodic and the musicianship was getting a lot better and some of the singers were getting better, and then you started getting the great Graffins and the Jim Lindberghs and the great Mountain Souls. A lot of that thing, a phenomenal singer, a phenomenal musician. But prior to that, like before you guys, like you kind of went from the Dead Boys, and then like what was the next, like band like that kind of was like almost like band. Then you even have like your Green Days and stuff like that, which you guys were all from that you know Bay Area at that time, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, I lived in San Francisco at the time, Mike. Right. Yeah, but yeah, in the late 80s, we were all living up
there. It started changing.
It did. It went from, well, first off, Bad Religion, Greg Graffin always sang great. Always.
Always.
Even the first Bad Religion single, like he's 16 years old and he sings
great. Wow.
You know, for me, I like anger. I like angst. I like aggressive stuff. So to be honest, a lot of it is too pussy for me.
Yeah, I get it. I'm right.
It doesn't have like when okay, so there's the Dead Boys, and the Dead Boys were actually had a lot of melody. Sure. But then but this way you in your face.
Yeah.
Like it definitely got away or parts our genre of punk rock got away from that anger, spit in your face, fuck you kind of like thing.
Sure. Sure.
You know, and it turned into like singer songwriter kind of stuff. And some of it's really good, but for the most part, that's not what floats my boat. I like right. in your face, fuck you shit.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I like a lot of the hardcore bands, Sick of It All. You know, I mean, even like I think I heard Fat Mike was even saying like at one time, he's like, you know, talking about hardcore bands. He's like, well, I consider NOFX a hardcore band. You know, and in the beginning, I mean, your guys' shit, I mean, it still is. I mean, and congratulations on the last record. I had Mike on the show. And I love it. Vanessa and I worked it out. I had Mike on the show. And I dissected that entire record, vocals and everything. And Mike and I talked about it for, you know, 35 minutes. So congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you. That one was a labor. That one was hard for me to read.
Yeah. You know, during the lockdown and what we were going through. And you guys were doing that. And I loved when you guys started doing those live rehearsals. That was rad.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
There's something like... Go ahead, sorry.
Back to the hardcore thing. It's like, yeah, I think so too. Because hardcore wasn't like, in my opinion,
yeah.
The word hardcore came from like the LA scene. The post art punk rock, the pre metal punk rock. There was a hardcore era, and that would have been like Black Flag and like I said, Wasted Youth and Circle Jerks and a Fear. Like there was a heart in your face. It was faster. It was more aggressive, and that's when we started. We started in that era, so we consider ourselves like a hardcore band.
Sure, you know. So that's the point I was trying to make, right?
Right, and then it kind of morphed into. You know, then the hardcore kind of morphed.
I have a punk band called Toxic Energy, and we're a hardcore band.
That is a fucking hardcore name.
Yeah, I came up with that name a while ago because I'd been in different bands, and after I just wouldn't work anymore, I said, God, there's so much fucking Toxic Energy, and I came up with the name, and the band has been going strong for about 4 years, and, you know, it's been a lot of fun. I'll send you some of the music. We're a hardcore band. We're like a hardcore melodic band. You might dig it. I emailed you. Did you get my email of that song we covered? Your guys' I've got to send it over to you. We did it during the lockdown. We did a five-song EP. It was a cover album called Songs We Wish We Wrote. and I came up with that title. And NOFX, we covered one of your guys' songs.
Oh, that's cool,
Triple
man.
Rock. Triple Rock.
And so you guys are
and with the last gang.
Oh, cool. Get a video tipped. I want to see it.
Yeah, I will. And I emailed it to you, but I will later. You know, something else I wanted to talk to you about outside of, you know, the band and Pickle Sticks, your surfboard company, we'll get to that. But something that I really take a lot of, I have a lot of respect for is sobriety. And you've been sober for a long time. And congratulations on that. How long have you been sober for?
29 and a half years.
And how do you stay sober?
As cliche as it sounds, one day at a time. You know, yeah, I mean, it's
right.
I don't put any fucking goals on it. I don't do this or that. I just put one foot in front of the other and I surrounded, you know, it's easier now.
Sure.
But at the beginning, I surrounded myself around people that had what I wanted.
Sure.
And I listened to what those people had to say because they were trying to get sober. They knew something I didn't.
Right.
I see a lot of people, and I talk to a lot of people about getting sober. You know, I work with people.
And do you have sponsees?
I have one sponsee. But
do you really?
I get a lot of questions, like emails and stuff like that. And I work, you know, like I talk to them. And
yeah.
You know, a lot of people make it much more difficult than it has to be by trying to rationalize their behaviors or trying to rationalize like, well, that's not me, so I can do this and I can do that. Sure. And it's like, no, you know what, man? Just simplify, listen to the people around you. Hold on, my dog's going.
That's fine.
And it'll all work out in the long run.
Yeah. And, you know, there is that saying. I mean, you obviously worked a program. Do you still hit meetings?
No. I haven't hit a meeting in a while.
Yeah.
But everybody in my life, for the most part, is a program. Sober and clean and sober. And we, you know, that's like our meeting. You know, yeah. The meetings gave me a chance to get a life.
Sure.
The meetings were my life. Now I have my life. You know, and the meetings are a huge part of my life and my foundation, and I know they're there. And a couple years ago, I was going to them. I started going back to them regularly. I come and go with it, you know.
Sure. And so you just worked a program, got in, got a sponsor. You did it one day at a time. You stayed in the herd and the fellowship, and that's what got you to where you are today.
Yep, and I never questioned what was asked of me.
Right.
I would see people come into meetings, and within the fucking 20 or 30 days, they would be telling everybody how to do it and how to do this and how to do that. And the best way to stay sober is this and that. They were the first ones to go out. I was like, sat down.
What's the saying? Take the cotton out of your ears and take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth.
Yep. Or another saying is, yeah. Or here's one I just heard recently, but it sums it up even better. You have two ears and one mouth for a reason. Yeah. Listen twice the amount of time you're talking.
That's such a good point. That is such a good way to put it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's what I did. You know, I was like, you know, my life needed to change, and I was going nowhere very fast, actually for a long time. And I got lost with who I was, and I didn't like who I was, and I didn't know how to get out of it. So I listened to people that knew how to get out of it.
Yeah. You know, I just wanted to pay you respect on that, because I have friends in program, and I've seen it change their lives. And I have friends that are sponsors, and I have friends that are very involved in AA. And I have so much respect for the program. And I've been to meetings, and I watch my friends take chips, and I will go and I'll listen to the principles and the 12 steps. And sometimes, you know, I walk out of there and I go, you know what, dude, I go, this kind of fucking shit could work in everybody's life. Like, I don't think you need to be an alcoholic to come to AA. Like, the principles, like, you will fucking sit in these meetings, dude, and you will get better advice from someone that's been sober for 7-8 years, more so than you would a therapist you give $165 an hour to.
You just summed it up right there, because being an alcoholic, the drugs and the booze aren't the problem.
It's
you.
You, right.
So the first few steps are about getting that stuff out of your life, the drugs and the alcohol. And the rest of it is about working on you.
Yeah.
Your behaviors, your intentions, your resentments, your this, your that, your accountability.
Yeah.
And then it becomes really like therapeutic, really like own your shit, you know, and that's what it's about. It's not about, I mean, yes, it's about staying off the drugs and alcohol. That is just a symptom of your bad behavior, bad decision, insecurities, trauma, whatever it is.
Right.
So all of that stuff is based on becoming the best you possible, you know, and there's not a religious aspect of it, even though people think there is. It's what you make of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of the religious part, how did you do with the higher power? Was that kind of like hard for you to wrap your head around in the beginning, or
because
it was good.
My higher power is not a God. It's not like some dude in the fucking sky or some fucking Jesus Christ or some, it's, have you ever, like, when you're a kid or even an adult about to do something fucking really stupid, and begging you on, do it, don't do it, and you turn that off, but you listen to everybody else? You know what I mean?
Right.
To me, that everybody egging me on was my brain. My brain would say, oh, just go get high, or just go break into this car, just go do this. But my inner me, the voice inside of my voice, my heart, would be – deep inside going, don't do it. This isn't you. Don't do it. This isn't you. That's my higher power.
That voice.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Here's a little play on words. That voice is my God. And GOD stands for good orderly direction.
Yeah.
My heart is always going to lead me in the right place for who I am and what I need to be. It's my brain rationalizing, listen to other bullshit. When I'm in bed at night, that little voice in my chest telling me you shouldn't have done this, you shouldn't have, or you should do this. That's the truth for me. Yeah. And that was my smart power.
You give it back. And you're of service. And I wanted to talk to you about that because I don't know how many interviews you do. I don't know if people just want to talk to you about NoFX and whatnot. Like, I really wanted to pay you an attaboy and, you know, I know you don't need that from me, but I just wanted to tell you that I relate to that program. And I just think that that's awesome. And congratulations. I don't know how often you hear congratulations on 29 years of sobriety, but I just wanted to get your insight on it, the higher power, the meetings, the principles. And like I said, I just think that those programs are absolutely amazing. I've seen them work miracles.
Thank you. It changed my life. It really fucking did, you know? And hold on, Dixie, come here. My dog. Yeah, that program changed my life. And it's given me a life, you know? Yeah. It's given me the fucking chance to be a responsible society.
A while ago, hepatitis bathtub, and I got a lot of on there. And you know something else I really enjoy doing is maybe my son will go back and watch the old Passport shows. Uh-huh. Did you have a lot of fun doing that?
Yeah, that was really fun.
God, it looked fun. That was awesome.
There was a lot of trials. Yeah, well, this all comes back to the punk rock thing. Yeah, I like, you know, like in the punk rock, I like the anger. I like the chaos, you don't know what you're going to get. So doing that punk rock Passport or backstage Passport thing, that's what it was. It was more of that. It was like you're rolling into a town in the middle of nowhere. You don't know what the fuck you're going to get. And so it really was exciting. You know, I really enjoyed it. It was very punk rock.
It was really great. Do you think you guys would ever do anything like that again, kind of? I mean, maybe not tour those third world countries like that ever again.
No, we did it. We did a second season. I don't know how it did. Yeah. Like, we went back to some of the places that fucked up, like Peru and Mexico and stuff like that. But probably. Yeah. It's
drummer?
No, I don't. I mean, I have drummers like the drummer that as a punk rock drummer that has blown me away the most, like I listen to and I think that the most that just is out of control is this guy named Bomber Mazzullo from a band called RKL.
Yes.
And he's dead now, but it was like his drumming really influenced mine. But Spit Sticks from Fear has to be up there for drumming, punk rock drumming. His shit is just so weird. But no, I don't have a favorite. You know, it's like saying you have a favorite movie or a favorite food. Like, there's things that are like at the top of the list, but there's so much to choose from.
You know, that's one thing I kind of liked about you every time I've met you, which has only been, you know, far few in between, but you've always been super grounded, super down to earth and really just, you know, easy to approach and talk to. And I want to thank you for that because the world of you, I put you on a pedestal. I mean, my guitar player and I were even talking about, you know, what a sweetheart of a guy you are. And you make it that much funner. And
thank you.
That makes sense. You know,
Cool. All we're doing is playing fucking music. We're people just like everybody else.
I know.
You know what I mean?
I know that.
I am nothing fucking special. So to have an ego and an attitude and have this like my fucking shit don't stink thing, it's fucking wrong.
It is.
It's not like that's not a reality. The reality is I'm a dude just like everybody else, and I got lucky playing music that I'm able to do it for a living.
Sure.
You know, otherwise I'd be a fucking construction worker or something. So to think that I'm better than anybody or owed something or this or that is just fucking bullshit.
Do you think a lot of program plays into the way you carry yourself these days and your mentality like that? Maybe, you know.
No, I mean.
You were just like that.
Possibly. I think I'm just like, it's sickening.
Where are you originally from?
Glendale, California.
You are originally from Glendale. And do you have brothers and siblings, brothers and sisters?
I have a sister that's four and a half years younger than me. And I have a cousin who is like my brother. We brought him in when he was about two or three.
How was your childhood? Sports and stuff like that?
I played soccer a little bit, but my childhood wasn't very good.
Are your folks still around?
Yeah, they're still around. They're still together. Yeah. I came from very, very, very humble beginnings, very blue collar.
Yeah.
Alcoholic family.
Yeah.
Not a lot of emotional or love support, you know, just the alcoholic family.
Yeah. Well, so your kit, has it always kind of been the same, like ever since day one? Have you always stuck with the same symbols, the same setup, or have you changed?
When I first started, it was the same. It was what it is now. And then remember I told you I was tried getting fancy, kind of doing fancy shit? Mm-hmm. I started adding drums, thinking it would fucking make me a better player.
Right.
You know, because the more shit you hit, the more it sounds like you're a better player. But it just got in the way, and I just went back to the same thing. I'm at with what I started with.
That's so cool.
Yeah, just a basic four-piece drum set and a couple cymbals. That's about it.
Do you practice a lot on your own?
No. Rarely.
Do you think you would ever do a side project band? Probably not, huh? Could you imagine going to, like, Deep Piazza's and setting up your own drum set?
Dude. Deep Piazza's is what? From my house.
So you're right there by that golf course.
Yeah, Deep Piazza's is literally, when there's bands playing at Deep Piazza's, I can hear it from my backyard. I can walk there and
I'm always, do you get this liquid death stuff?
I just got four cases delivered today.
Dude, I got so much shit. I'm sponsored by them. My wife's going crazy now. She's like, what the fuck are you gonna do with all this shit? And like, it just keeps coming in. I was like, well, hopefully I could go take a few cases to smell it.
Yeah.
I gave some to Jack from TSOL because we did a show with him, and I'm going to go take him two more cases. I'm just like, because, well, we were all going into the station and doing the shows, and I was at a terrestrial station in Newport Beach with the poor man right up into the pandemic, and then the pandemic hit, and I lost my sponsors, and then I started doing LA Talk Radio, and our show is in Sherman Oaks, but then I live in Anaheim, and I'm like, okay, well, fuck, I can just do it this way. So, like, all this liquid death was supposed to go to the stations and get distributed to the guests. And I might be going to another terrestrial station, 104.7 up in Laguna. I'm going back, but then I guess XM to do a show over there. But then again, pandemic put the break, or COVID right. Put the brakes on that. So I have all this liquid death, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I'm like, they send it, I start feeling guilty.
Well, you know what? At the end of the day, if you ever find yourself out of a job, you could sling it on a corner.
There you go. There you go. You know, it's funny. So that's what I was going to go, oh, you know what? Maybe I could get him a couple of cases of liquid.
No, dude, I get so much. I mean, I give it away. I drink. The only two things I drink are water and coffee.
That's it.
And it's liquid death and coffee.
Yeah. But back to the side project thing.
Dude, you know, I mean, I think I would rather just get together with people and jam in a room than to actually go out and play shows and, like, do this and do that. You know what I mean?
Well, NoFX is a very busy band, though. I mean, you guys play a lot. I mean
not in the last couple of years, dude.
Well, I understand that, but...
Fuck yeah, that'd be fun. Actually go out and try the grind and try and get anywhere with something, I've been playing music for 40 years. I'm just kind of...
Do you get out and see any bands?
Rarely, you know. Yeah. I know it sounds kind of weird, but
no,
there's not a lot of bands that have that float my boat these days, and there hasn't been in the last 20 years. There's been a couple that I'll go see, but for the most part, if I go see a band, it's a friend's band, somebody that I really like. You know, I'll go see the Souls, or I'll go see Rise Against, or you know, people that I know that it's going to, you know, give them a big hug and tell them I love them.
Don't you just love the Bouncing Souls?
Oh, the greatest guys.
You know what I say about the Bouncing Souls is every guy in that band is just like you. Grounded, super lovable, super approachable, integrity, and always laughing and smiling and just always fucking rad. There's no rock star bullshit. Mm-hmm. There's no fucking like, oh man, I wish, you know, I didn't go up to him. Because sometimes, you know, like you could go meet your heroes or guys you've looked up to forever and you're like, fuck, that sucked.
Yeah.
I wish to God I would never have met. I remember being young and going to Pennywise shows, and I would meet like Fletcher or Jim, and I would be like, you know, fucking 10 beers into it, and I would be like 22, 23 years old. I couldn't even talk. I was so just like nervous and flabbergasted to meet them, and I could just imagine. But, you know, those guys have always been great to me too. Super sweetheart guys.
Those guys, awesome. Pretty much everybody in our scene is pretty fucking cool. Yeah. Every once in a while, you'll come across somebody that's ego is so big, but their egos all stem from insecurities.
Sure. You know,
they're just trying to project something that they don't feel that they are.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody's pretty fucking solid. Yeah, there's fucking people that are fucking douches, but in the punk rock world, not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot. Everybody's been rad. Jim and Fletcher have done more for me than I could ever imagine. I love those guys to death. Fat Mike threw me an interview. I mean, that was super rad. I was super fucking nervous to do that one. But, you know, I've had a lot of great people. I've had, like, Sugarfoot on my show. He's a good friend of mine, you know. You know, and all the way up to, like, guys in, like, metal bands, like Rat and Ricky Rocket. A lot of drummers now that I think about it. But kind of funny, right? And so, yeah, with that being said, I just, you know, I was curious about, like, you know, the your setup with that. So let's switch gears here. And again, congratulations on the sobriety. Congratulations on the last record. Thanks for being the guy you are. I want to talk about the surfboard company. Cool. Where did this Pickle Sticks, right?
Yep.
Talk to me about that. Where did that idea come from? Where did the name come from? And how's it going?
It's going great. I mean, I've been surfing forever. I've been surfing for as long as I've been sober, right? You know, you substitute things for another. Sure, sure. And so, music to me just isn't something that I listen to. It's something that I play. It's something that I had to investigate farther. Maybe it's my addictive personality, you know. With surfboards, like, surfboards are made by hand. You know, they're like, they're shaped out of a piece of foam. And so 14 years ago, I was like, you know what? I'd seen people do it. I'd seen pictures of it, seen some videos. I'm like, fuck, I want to give that a go. You know, because I've always been kind of a hands-on kind of guy. I'm good with tools. You know, I grew up doing a lot of, like, that kind of shit, tool shit. So I did. I just jumped in and, you know, got a couple DVDs and started figuring it out. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into surfboards. But so 14 years ago, I started shaping boards. And my first one I finished, and I was like, holy fuck, that's really a surfboard. So I did that, and it worked. So it's like, stoked me. And then I shaped a second one. And the second one came out even better than the first one, and I painted it, like, pickle green. And so my friends would go, hey, you surfing today? I go, yeah, I'm surfing. And they go, what board are you riding? I go, I'm going to ride my Pickle Stick.
Rad.
And that's how Pickle Sticks came to be. There was no name for my board company. You know, I was just shaping boards in a garage.
Right.
So that was my Pickle Stick. And then I just continued shaping and shaping and shaping. And then eventually I was like, fuck, I guess I should have a name. So Pickle Sticks stuck.
Yeah, that's so cool. And now, when did you start? I know you said you've been surfing as long as you've been sober. When did you actually dive into making, no pun intended, but when did you actually dive into making the boards?
2008 is when I started making surfboards.
Wow, and do you do it at home?
It's not ventilated. No? For the when you do the fiberglass job, the resin stuff, yes. But just for the shaping, no, you need an isolated room with really good lights that are, like, halfway up the wall to cast shadows over the top of the board so you can see the high spots and low spots. Right. So you know where to plane and where to sand and stuff like that. So 2008, I started doing it. And, you know, I probably did a couple hundred, 200 or 300, you know, just fucking around, selling them at, here and there, Craigslist, friends, at a couple shops locally. And then when the pandemic hit, overnight, I was like, fuck, I think I might be unemployed for maybe the rest of my life.
Right.
You know? And I really enjoy shaping surfboards, and I was getting pretty proficient at it. To where I was like, you know what? I'm gonna take the ball and run with this and just see what it does.
Yeah.
So I started 2 years ago. Yeah, I guess 2 years ago, right about now, I started, like, shaping full time, and I've done probably about 600 boards.
Wow.
In my lifetime.
Sure.
And 500. And it's just something I love. It's very, like, I got a little shaping bay, a little place. Go in there, shut out the world, put on some music, and just get into creating a functional piece of art.
So now that you're this far advanced, is there any opportunity for you to get these into, like, Jack surfboards or, like, the Frog House or anything like that? Or do you just kind of want to keep it more, like, underground and just kind of sell private party? And
yeah, I mean, it's DIY. I sell private party. Caton Surfboards had a few of my boards in there for a while. And then there's a shop called 17th Street Board Shop that a few years. I've got an order for another shop that I'm going to put them in there. But
so you're busy with this, dude.
Yeah, it's every day. It's
You're busy, dude. Yeah. How long does it take to make a board? Just a standard surfboard. What is a standard surfboard? 6 feet?
They're short boards. They're all standard. I mean, it just depends on what style of board. But let's just say a 6 foot board.
Right.
If I was to shape it, there's two ways of shaping it. One is by hand completely. You get the blank, you get the piece of foam, and you put a template on it, you cut out the shape, and you just start fucking going for it. That'll take me 2.5-3 hours. That's just for the shape. There's the glassing aspect of it later down the line.
Right.
But now, the last 2 years, I've been using I've hand shaped. But I also use a CNC program where I can design the board on my computer and you know, turn it around and see the curves and see the lines and see what it is. And then I can send that off to a CNC cutter. They cut it, and it's about 60% done.
Oh, wow.
The rough work's done, and then I take it, and it takes me about an hour and a half to finish it.
Okay.
And then the glass, I take it to a glass shop to do that. So, but for me to design a board on the computer takes a couple hours, and then to shape it after it's been cut takes an hour. So about 3 hours if I do it on the computer, and about 3 hours if I do it by hand. But on the computer, let's say I made you a board.
Right.
On the computer, I save your file. And then you go, hey, dude, it was fucking great. It was really cool. Except for when I turned, it was a little block. Like, it just didn't want to drive through. So I go on the computer and I could just take the tail rocker, the back part of the board where it flips up, just click it up an eighth of an inch or whatever, you know, to where it takes guesswork out of it. I could actually see the numbers.
God, that's so impressive. Do you think you'll ever do paddle boards?
Too expensive to do. Like, you buy one that's orange, can't put a paddle board, it would cost $1,200.
I love paddle boarding. I just bought paddle boards. I skate still. I'm 48 and I still skate. I think I sent you my funny video.
You did. You drop it in.
Yeah, I still go skate. And my guitar player, I'm going to talk to you off air. I'll text you about getting a board done for me. But we were talking. I keep saying, I want to surf. And everyone's like, you got to go to Old Man's. You got to ride a longboard and yada, yada, yada. And it is something that is definitely on my bucket list that I do want to give a try. I am definitely going to do it this year.
Dude, it's you get a longboard, you go to Old Man's. The hardest part it's a pretty steep learning curve surfing, but just getting familiar with paddling the board, getting your upper body strength up to where you could paddle comfortably and confidently and go anywhere. The positioning on the board, that is fucking 3/4 of the battle.
Yeah. If somebody wanted to order from you, DM you
with an X.
Yeah,
I'm doing a fucking commercial.
Good. Infomercial.
Pickle Sticks with an X _ or email me. Pickle Sticks with an X surfboards at Gmail. Pickle Sticks with an X surfboards. At Gmail.
So you're going to make me one, and it's going to be that green because that's my favorite color, and it's going to say toxic energy.
Dude, I could do that. I could make you. How tall are you? You're like 5'9"?
No, I'm short. I'm like F.A.'s height, like 5'6".
I think you're 5'6" or 5'5".
Yeah, I'm short. I'm like 5'6", 5'6" and a half.
Okay, let's say you're 5'6". I could make you, we can go 9'0", but I would probably make you like an 8'6", 22 and a half wide, 3 inches thick. Nice, easy, just paddle, it'll coast in.
And I can ride that at Old Man's?
Fuck yeah,
we're doing it.
Old Man's is badass, it's fun.
I go back real quick, with the pandemic and being out of work. Smelly, what was that feeling like? You know, like, obviously NOFX is an established band and a successful band. And I know you guys do financially well playing, which you deserve to and you should. But like, so many other bands that don't have that clout that NOFX or Pennywise has, or that's a few tiers under. But even being in that position that you were in, what was that like? Thinking like, fuck, like, we really don't know if we're ever going to play again. Is it a feat? Because, it seems to me that a lot of you guys were smart with your money and saved it. Now, I could be wrong.
Not all of us.
Not right. See, but like, how did people fucking get by?
Okay, first off, getting your heart pulled out. You know, it was
because
not only do I play music for, it's what I do for work and finances and stuff like that. It's what I do for a passion. So I felt like I just got my life unplugged.
Sure.
You know, I felt like I just had lost something extremely dear to me. And it was really sad and confusing. And then you put the this is what I do for work on top of that, you know. Yes, I was smart and I saved my money, but it's not forever money by any means. It's not like money that bands were making in the 80s or even in the 90s, because we, you know, like big bands, you know, that I wasn't financially or emotionally ready for retirement, forced retirement, right. You know, yeah. And the emotional part of having what I love stopped overnight. It fucking really was scary and emotionally troubling. It was hard.
Guys like you, that a lot of people are in that position, right? Bartenders, whatever. But what's the mentality like now when getting paid?
When I play shows now, okay, since the pandemic happened 2 years ago, I think
it's a different outlook, right?
Huh?
Different outlook. Like different you're probably outlook. Way different with your money now.
I think we've played 6 shows. It's not something, I mean, the money still has to go to the bills. The money still has to do this and that. So it's not that I'm different with the money. It's my attitude has always been a pretty good attitude about playing shows, but it does kind of turn into one show after another. And, you know, like Groundhog's Day, like, yes, the best part of the day is playing a show and I fucking love it, but it's like, it feels really, really liberating to be able to get back on that stage. Not to, because now I'm there in me playing live again. And it just gave me, I've always respected it, but it gave me a different appreciation of it.
What would it be like, okay, I want to go buy this, like, okay, whatever. Let's just say you're into classic cars and it's a $20,000 car. You know, would you look at that now and say, I think I'm just going to be smarter with my money and just put it away?
Absolutely. That right? For sure.
Right.
That for sure. Like, yeah, I haven't done any frivolous spend. No. It's I'm 55 years old. I'm not getting any younger. And if the band was to stop tomorrow, what am I going to do? You know, I'm going to make surfboards, but I don't make much money there. It's more just to do what I love and, you know, pass the time.
Sure.
Like what I got is what I got and I got to figure it out. So no, I haven't spent any money on anything stupid.
Yeah. Like I play a lot of golf with Lyman and we play. And, you know, I don't really talk to him about bands. We talk about golf and just family. But I was like, at one point, we're on the tee box, and I go, fuck, dude. I go, do you think you'll ever do another festival? And he goes, can you believe that I just decided to take this year off? Like, he goes, I just decided to take this year off. I didn't want to do anything, and then this thing hits. And I go, well, a lot of those bands that you book on the tours and whatnot, work tour or whatever, like, they do financially well. They do pretty good. He's like, well, they also spend pretty good too.
Yeah.
You know, no band in particular. We were just talking in a general, like, which is true. I get it. Nobody's seen anything like this kind of thing.
You know, like for the band members, like, I make a good living when we're working. I do.
Sure.
I'm not going to lie.
And you should. You fucking should.
I mean, you know, whatever. I'm lucky. I'm fortunate.
You guys are fucking the best in the business, dude.
But you know where it really hit was the crew guys, the bus driver, the bus company. Right. Like, this is a bit too.
Sure.
You know, right. And yeah, it was scary and this and that. And I would have to change, you know, it gave me the opportunity to look at my financial responsibilities, you know, but most people, it hit them more in the balls than it hit me.
Yeah.
So, it sucked. It was scary. I think for me, it was harder just because it's something I've done for 40 years and then it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, the finances suck, but for the people that live check to check, fuck, I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, it was a double whammy, you know, for a guy like you, that's your passion and a way to make a living, and they're both kind of ripped right out from you, you know. So I'm totally sensitive to that. I'm going to ask you one other question that I'm going to let you go, but how do you feel about the music industry today? Like, it came this time, telephone poles, spreading the name, getting demo tapes, you know, building your own following, you know, doing your own marketing, getting out there and really hustling, beating the streets, playing these shows. And then now everybody can just, like, you know, this saying, I think Eddie Trunk says it best, the good thing about technology today is everybody can put music out. And the bad thing is everybody can put music out. Seeing it, like, people have it a lot easier these days. I mean, it's so indie, but does it kind of trip you out on like, and this would probably be going back to more like the mainstream, like, you know, when we're talking about the hard rock bands, but like, remember back in the day when people would stand in line at Music Plus or the Warehouse, or you could buy a single, or, you know, you'd open the OC Weekly or BAM or whatever. Like,
yeah, and you'd look up and down, see who has a demo tape coming out, or look, see who's playing the Coach House or whatever.
Right. Maybe. And now, exactly. And now it's just like, fuck, everybody's got a band. Everyone's on YouTube. It's like, it's almost like there's not even a such thing as a celebrity anymore.
There's no record sales. There's no like hit the streets running kind of vibe. You know, we would get in a van when we were 18 years old and just head east, not knowing where we're going, roll into a town and say, find the record store and say, hey, can we play someone's house? I don't think there's a whole lot of that going on these days, but there's other avenues for people to be discovered, such as YouTube and TikTok and all that shit. But there's other avenues for people to be buried in because there's so much out there. So you could be an amazing fucking dude and so fucking good and natural, but there's 10 zillion other fucking Yahoos putting shit up that you're just going to get covered. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm an old guy. I am not in my fingers on the pulse. It's like asking, you know, it's like asking my great grandma, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't know, you know.
I think it just trips me out, dude. I think I just trip hard on that. I'm just like, maybe it's just a part of me that I kind of miss that. Like, I'm like, fuck, it was so rad back then. Like, it was just, you know, I'm older too, you know.
There's some of that still, though. Like, my son listens to this, like, this underground hip-hop shit that's almost like punk rock. Yeah. Like, there's this kind of NASCAR Aloe.
Yeah.
That's in your face, screaming. He has spikes in his hair. It's digital music, you know, like, you know, or whatever, and he's just screaming and punk rock and then melody behind it.
Yeah.
But he will blast like on, I don't know, Instagram, or whatever. I'm playing this Warehouse tonight, 7:30. And then people just show up.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So there is an underground scene. I think we're just not in touch with it.
Well, I'm starting to surf now. So I'm changing. I'm going to get my new surfboard.
There you go.
So thank you for taking time after and sit and talk to me. And thanks again for making this so easy for me. This was probably one of the most funnest conversations I've ever had with a musician. So I thank you tremendously for it. I really, really means a lot to me.
Thank you very much, man. And
if you ever need any liquid death, I got you covered.
I'm going to have one right after this, dude.
Right? Hey, dude, I wish you so much more success. Pickle Sticks, if you want a surfboard, DM them. I'll put it on the site. I'll have LA Talk Radio fly it, and hopefully you get some orders through there. I'm going to try
That'll be awesome, dude. I love making
surfboards. We're going to do one for me, so I'm going to text you when we hang up.
Every surfboard I make is 100% custom-made for the person and for the style of waves and what they're looking for.
That'd be so much fun, and I'm going to try to get out to one of these Punk and Drublic deals and see you guys play. I don't know which one.
I think San Diego would be the good one.
If you're not doing anything on the 19th, I know Noodles was telling me he's going to fill in for that punk rock karaoke at Alex's bar.
Maybe I'll join you over there.
Yeah, I'll hit you up and see what's up. Thanks so much, dude. I wish you good health and so much more success in everything you do. And I really appreciate you taking some time to talk to me today. And I can't wait to see you again. And just thank you from the bottom of my heart. This was kick-ass.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time.
Cool, man. Congratulations again on everything. And I'll see you real soon.
All right, bye.
Have a good afternoon. Bye-bye.